Good evening, folks, and welcome back on this 20th day of July 2019. I'm your host, Mark Call, and it is an interesting anniversary. 50 years to the day after so many of us can remember where we were and what we were doing, watching Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin. Some folks don't believe the moon landing anymore, and given the amount of lies that Big Brother's been getting away with for so many years, I certainly can at least understand the sentiment. And now that we've got Two Facebook, Gulag, and the Jihad Squad, the really big lies are no longer the exception. They're practically the rule. And it's helping to foment that coming civil war and the big split in American society. Either people see through it and are disgusted by it, or they're drinking the Kool-Aid and arguably deserve what they're so clearly going to get. The trouble is, of course, that we're rapidly getting to the point where even if you don't believe what you're being told, you're not going to be allowed to hear anything else. So maybe this is a great way to kick off our recap of a week of whoppers, whoppers, and more whoppers. Comes from Colorado State University at the other end of the state, literally in more ways than one. By the way, I have my own title for this one. I call it CSU PCBS. But Paul Joseph Watson has another headline. It says that Colorado State University, sick, has issued a new inclusive language guide, I kid you not, that says, among other things, you are supposed to avoid using the word America. They didn't even spell it right. They left out the K because it's not inclusive. They're not particularly happy with the word American either, probably because as far as they're concerned, American't. But what they claim is that by referring to the U.S. as America, one, quote, erases other cultures and depicts the United States as the dominant American country, unquote. And they're blankety-blanking determined to make sure that is no longer true. The school, sick, suggests using U.S. citizen instead, or person from the U.S. as substitutes. Other words to avoid, notes the story, include the following: male and female, or ladies and gentlemen, and of course, Mr., Mrs., and even Ms., which was oh so politically correct not too long ago. And the problem's obvious, because there are an infinite number of genders, we can't know what a person's real gender really is. Equally verboten is the word straight when it's used to refer to cisgendered heterosexuals, because that would imply that LGBTQ plus necrophilia, bestiality, pedophile, etc. plus types are somehow crooked or not straight. Not normal. By the way, normal is another word that you're not supposed to use for the same obvious reason. Heaven forbid, folks, that one of their dumbed-down so-called students would ever take a course in mathematics or statistics and encounter a dreaded normal distribution. I imagine they quake at the thought. And there's a whole lot of other words that are on the verboten list, including war, cakewalk, eeny, meeny, miny, mo, Eskimo, freshman, hip, hip, hooray, hold down the fort, starving, and policemen, all of which are non-inclusive. And get this, folks, handicap parking, too, is Achtung verboten, because that could offend disabled people. I have a question. How about those of us offended by politically correct idiocy like this masquerading as education? If we're offended, doesn't that count for something? And here's a real thigh slapper. Are any of us old enough to remember when studying vocabulary meant adding words to one's vocabulary rather than eliminating them? Which inclines me to ask another related question. How do you know if you're old, or at least a little bit old, old enough to remember some other things, too? Old enough at least to remember when the world was an absolutely nutcase insane. Can you remember when Soviet women in the Olympics looked like men but really were women? Some of them got disqualified for taking male hormones. And the lament then was, it's just not fair for Soviet women that look like men to be winning women's competitions at the Olympics, especially if they're doping with male hormones. At least they didn't have a bulge, you know where. Well, that was a long time ago, so I guess the question is, if you're old enough to remember when women's sports competitions were actually won by real women, you must be old. Now, transgender so-called women with penises, even if they decided not to keep them, and male hormones get to literally obliterate women's records worldwide while claiming that they're women, but obviously aren't. Here's the headline from the Daily Caller today. A transgender weightlifter who was at least born with a you-know-what named Gavin Hubbard competed in the male weightlifting division until his transition in 2012, and yesterday that biological male took home 2 gold medals and a silver for New Zealand at the 2019 Pacific Games in Samoa, allegedly in the women's category. But come on, folks, are you old enough to remember that once upon a time there really were women that competed as women, and now it doesn't seem to make a blankety-blanking bit of difference? So, are you old enough to remember when women's sports featured real women? Oh, wait, here's another one. Are you old enough to remember when Congress actually featured real Americans? And by that, I mean they could read English and understand what a constitutional republic was. And I guess here's another one. Can you remember when Europe was actually European? Here's a headline from the aggregator news site Zero Hedge about, thankfully, lame duck German Chancellor Angela Merkel, who seems to have saved face. Because Germany's Ursula von der Leyen, considered a key and close ally of Der Chancellor, has been narrowly elected, I will say sick, because I have to use that term very loosely here, as president of the EU Commission, becoming, it says, the first woman, real or otherwise, to fill Europe's most powerful policy-making post. Said chief economist at Berenberg Bank, Holger Schmeidling, the EU had, quote, averted a major institutional crisis by finally getting her appointed. She's called a center-right German defense minister. I kid you not. And now all that seems to mean is not as far, far left as the occasional Cortex and her comrades. You'll see what I mean in just a second. She will replace Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker starting November 1st. After she managed to get votes from over half of the members of the European Parliament on Tuesday evening. Now, they make this out to be a major accomplishment. Get this. 374 votes were needed to confirm, and she managed to squeak by getting 383 so-called lawmakers that aren't elected anyway to vote for her, winning by a narrow 9-vote margin. Against nobody. Now, the trouble is, as at least one member of parliament had the chutzpah to point out, she managed to win a one-horse race by just 9 votes, said Michael Heaver, and that's farcical. Why it was called an election at all, writes Paul Joseph Watson, is kind of baffling, because von der Leyen had zero competition, but still managed to just barely squeak through. As he noted, indeed, the only choice on the ballot was which language to read it in, and still, she just barely managed to win. Raheem Kassam pointed out that this is the EU's idea of democracy. One candidate, no mandate, and she now wields exclusive control of one of the world's largest power blocks. Truly, he said, this is Soviet-level stuff. And so, of course, are her aspirations. But the BBC seems to be drinking the Kool-Aid. Their political analysts claim that European leaders, sick, will be breathing a sigh of relief, given that it took days of fraught negotiations and a difficult compromise among EU countries to nominate the leftist that they don't call that, von der Leyen. And this may be part of the reason why, folks. Prior to the vote, she told the bureaucrat EU Parliament, "Our most pressing challenge is keeping our planet healthy. This is the greatest responsibility and opportunity of our times." But wait, there's more. She also vowed to push for more social welfare oversight by the EU to advance women's rights, whatever that now means, and to root out poverty, which probably means brace for mass starvation, Europe. On the subject of non-existent, politically correct, though, man-made global warming, she pledged to turn parts of the European Investment Bank, the EU's lending arm, into a climate bank, in a bid to unlock what was called 1 trillion euros of investment, sick, over the coming decade. So more Europeans can probably expect to freeze to death over coming years, too. And now that it's open, in the United States, the Bolshevik Revolution is going full speed, Cloward Piven, Marxist-Leninist ahead. Still currently centered on, but no longer limited to, the 4 comrade horsemen of the communist apocalypse. Like it or not, we'll have to come back to that in a while. I do want to briefly touch on a story that basically amounts to stay tuned to this channel. Will Americans ever be allowed to hear about the depths of depravity surrounding the deep state and, of course, the Epstein-Lolita Express connection? At best, the answer is maybe. But at least as the week ended, we had a piece from Zero Hedge summarizing several stories saying it's going to be staggering, well, maybe, as Epstein associates prepare for the worst. Soon, real soon now, there will be, we promise, a massive document dump. Here we go. As the Jeffrey Epstein case continues to unfold, and this week he was denied bail, imagine, folks, the judge decided that a guy who had a private 727, tons of politicians, and high-level insiders, including who knows what kind of explicit photos and videos and great blackmail material of all kinds of high-ranking people, as well as foreign passports and a Saudi residence, just might be a flight risk. Do you think? And it's not just the rapist president, Ehud Barak, and Victoria's Secret boss Les Wexner, who've sought to distance themselves from Epstein and his activities. There are other questions coming to the fore. How did this guy come up with $500 million? Who knew about his alleged abuse, and when? And what did easy Acosta mean when he said Epstein belonged to intelligence, and he was evidently therefore untouchable? Yes, inquiring minds certainly want to know, so the question remains, if and when all this starts to come out, whose names will get redacted? Which is at least a good segue to the censorship front, where the goal is still to silence any and all opposition. Achtung! A Google executive claimed that Alex Jones and InfoWars would soon be completely eradicated from their video platforms, especially YouTube. Speaking during a Senate hearing on Tuesday over their now unmasked, but they're proud of it anyway, censorship practices, Google's VP for Government Affairs and Public Policy, Karan Bhatia, assured known Alex Jones hater Senator Richard Blumenthal, Communist of California, that Big Brother China's favorite partner was doing everything in its power to remove any and all content related to the InfoWars host. And this piece, of course, is from Jamie White at InfoWars, while they're still allowed to post anything on the web at all. The so-called senator is still pushing the Sandy Hook lies, saying they were, quote, more than just false. They were malicious. They were cruel. They incited harassment, physical threats. They forced his family, literally every day, to relive their loss, unquote. And is he talking about people that have been damaged by Antifa, folks? Is he talking about the stuff that they're pushing now every single day? Is he talking, for example, about Facebook's allowing and even encouraging death threats against conservatives? They're talking about utterly silencing, for starters, any alternative viewpoints to the far-left propaganda they want to push. They're lying through their teeth and talking about anybody that dares oppose their far-left agenda. Denang Dick went on to say, "This stuff is not speech, it's incitement, harassment, defamation. I respectfully suggest whatever your machines are, they're not working. Would you agree?" Unquote. And by that, folks, he meant there are still a few pockets where free speech exists. What are you doing to eradicate them utterly? To which the response was that Google was using not only its algorithms, but also its human assets. I think I have to put sick after that now, don't I? To identify and remove any and all videos related to Alex Jones, or anybody that gets tarred or feathered by merely being associated with, pictured with, or mentioning the guy. Quote, "We believe that hoax videos of the kind you reference, and he had to experience, have no place on any of our platforms." Now, folks, of course, if you're going to kill people, if you want to advertise for it, if you want to commit various kinds of crimes against the constitutional republics, if you want to engage in all kinds of violence against the right kind of people, and probably, if you want to promote child sex trafficking, bestiality, and who knows what else, hey, Google isn't going to stop you. They'll certainly allow the searches, and YouTube will probably keep on monetizing your videos. But it would seem, if you've ever read the Constitution or the Bible, watch out. Continued Bhatia, "And we've taken the challenge, the need to address that very seriously, including most recently amending our policies earlier this year, our community guidelines, to make clear that any such video that comes out will be taken down immediately." Unquote. So their censorship continues apace, folks, but they haven't completely silenced everybody to the right of Ilhan Omar yet. because he had to add that given the quantity of video that gets uploaded at any point in time, we have to depend on tools, on machines, to try and spot those videos. We're constantly trying to improve them, and they are improving, and that means Achtung, we'll get rid of you yet. Where we miss something and it gets caught by a viewer, then we take action against it. But that wasn't evidently enough to satisfy the socialist silencer. Blumenthal expressed his displeasure with Gulag's already draconian methods, and he didn't think the tech giant was yet going far enough to completely censor all traces of Alex Jones and InfoWars and anybody that's ever had anything to do with them. And, of course, that's just the start from the Internet. Said Da Nang Dick, who's obviously still smarting from having been exposed on that particular lie, too, quote, "These kinds of policies, guidelines, forgive me, platitudes, are no substitute, Achtung, for effective enforcement. You can't simply unleash the monster and say it's too big to control." Folks, I'm not kidding. This stuff sounds like something right out of Ayn Rand's Atlas Shrugged. They've literally already got Orwell's Ministry of Truth beat, because it really is Adolf Hitler's big lie right out of Mein Kampf. In their goal to achieve 100% censorship, Gulag's Bhatia said, "We don't want these kinds of videos up. It's certainly not conducive to the kind of community we're looking to build at YouTube." And if that doesn't send a chill down your spine, folks, you've been watching too much CNN. So as we watch what looks like a really bad remake of some kind of hideous mix of the Terminator movies and Minority Report, combined with some dystopian Soviet-era propaganda film, it's fair to ask the question, is there any good news in here, or even any hope, that good people may actually wake up to this agenda before it's too late? Maybe, says a piece from TheVigilantCitizen.com, Netflix, one of the most PC of the most PC streaming video providers, lost over 133,000 U.S. subscribers in their second quarter of 2019. Releasing financial results that were nothing short of disastrous. Indeed, it says the streaming company saw its first major loss of U.S. subscribers, over 130,000 cancellations, while the number of international subscriptions barely reached 50% of what they had forecast, while the stock dropped immediately by 10% after the release of the devastating report. And here's the kicker. They're not going to tell you the real reason, and neither is mass media, but it's kind of obvious once you take a look. Yes, they did hike their prices about 20%. There certainly is competition from other streaming services and the arrival of new services online like Warner Media, Disney, and Apple, and maybe that's not saying too much. Not to mention the stagnation of their content library. And while all of that might explain some of the losses, suggests the Vigilant Citizen, the people of Netflix and the mass media sources appear to be purposefully ignoring the real elephant in the room. Lots of people are just plain sick and tired when it comes to the content that's being shoved down their throats on Netflix. Furthermore, many find it to be toxic and harmful to its viewers, especially younger ones. And that's particularly evident when one looks at the various series created by Netflix. Their original content, says this article, is just plain terrible. And each year, they dedicate over $12 billion to create exclusive original content, which at least is meant to attract new customers while keeping existing ones loyal to the brand. But there is a major problem. Almost all of it is heavily tainted by a clear, obvious, and downright annoying agenda, which does tend to irritate a whole lot of people. And on that score, one thing shines through above all. There is only one opinion and viewpoint allowed on Netflix. Everything is subjected to this extremely rigid, suffocating, and oppressive rule of political correctness, woke activism, and radical social engineering that's promoted by the occult elite. In short, says the Vigilant Citizen, Netflix is a propaganda streaming service mixed with content custom-made to debase, corrupt, and traumatize young minds through insidious reprogramming masquerading as entertainment. And needless to say, a lot of folks don't like most of that. Although mass media tends to dismiss and avoid the fact, a great portion of the U.S. population is increasingly aware of the global elite's agenda and is beginning to actively reject it. To the extent that as mass media turns into an increasingly radical tool for indoctrination that borders on desperation, a growing number of people have learned how to identify attempts at propaganda inserted into it, and they've decided to avoid it. And furthermore, notes this story, that above does not only apply to so-called conservative or religious Americans. Lots of people with no specific ideological leaning simply don't want to be preached to or told what to think while consuming entertainment. They actually just want to be entertained. Case in point, one of the most popular series available on Netflix is called The Office, focusing on comedy and reliable characters, not on social and ideological propaganda. The series is a product of an earlier era, 2005-13, before the complete radicalization of mass media, so one wonders how many subscribers Netflix will lose when The Office leaves its lineup in 2020, because they're clearly incapable of producing quality content that's not abrasive to a large percentage of the U.S. population. And here, folks, they list some of the most egregious examples. At least, I hope they're the most egregious, because I can't imagine that they could do too much worse than this. And I'll admit, even the promo picture of this first one absolutely galls me. The Netflix original series, if you can believe this, is called Bill Nye Saves the World. And they have a picture of this narcissist posing like Superman with his stern, superior, I know better than you about everything expression and his hands on his hips while his long coat flails like a cape. Yeah, a pseudo-Superman. Once billed as Bill Nye the Science Guy, the pseudo-science guy and the pseudo-science series Bill Nye Saves the World unashamedly departed from the field of scientific fact to promote an openly radical and highly debatable agenda. Bought and paid for science, pretending to be the real thing. It's not bad enough that he's already devolved into a condescending series of diatribes about non-scientific issues that have gotten extremely unpleasant to watch, writes the author. This show just seems to kind of take it to an all-new level. The episode, The Sexual Spectrum, writes the author, embodied everything wrong with the series. Set your face to cringe, and here's part of it. In the episode, Bill Nye argues there's not two genders, male and female, you may have once heard, but an entire spectrum filled with at least 76 of them, and that's in direct contradiction to the teachings of the original Billy Nye the Science Guy series that actually did have to do with science when it aired back in the 1990s. And guess what? Netflix removed that part of the Bill Nye the Science Guy series because we can't have young people being contaminated by the truth, even if it comes from the same source, which would make his flip-flop kind of painfully obvious, too. But wait, folks, it gets worse from there. 13 Reasons Why, says the piece, revolves around the suicide of a 17-year-old high school student. And until it just got edited out, it even featured a graphic scene depicting a how-to of suicide. And ever since its release, mental health professionals have warned viewers about the negative effects that the series will have on young viewers. In May 2019, the Journal of the American Academy, oops, no CSU award for them, of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry concluded that the series was associated with a significant increase in monthly suicide rates among U.S. youth aged 10 to 17 years, directly following its release in April of 2017. The number of deaths by suicide during that month was greater than the number seen in any single month during the five-year period examined by researchers, said the study, and they associated the show with a 29% increase in suicide rates among young people directly following its release. Said this author, the show creates an immersive experience that focuses on specific dark ideas, thoughts, and emotions, and under the deceptive premise of addressing mental health issues, the show actually glamorizes suicide. But wait, that's not all they glamorize. How about witchcraft, the occult, and outright Satanism? The first season of The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, another wonderful bit of programming, says the piece, is so replete with toxic messages that the author concluded an entire lengthy article was necessary just to properly analyze its disgusting contents. Indeed, nearly every scene promotes some kind of agenda to its young viewers about how they should relate to Sabrina, a high school girl who becomes a witch and gives her soul to Satan. But among the messages being promoted, it almost reads like a major politically correct university syllabus, Satanism is cool and modern, Satanism is an ally of feminism and LGBTQ, etc. Witchcraft is a powerful tool to topple white patriarchy, and more. There are also scenes sexualizing minors, kind of like a promo for the Lolita Express, and even cannibalism involving children, and of course, the usual unexpected massive desecration of Christianity and anything and everything biblical. Speaking of cannibalism, though, they got a whole show glorifying that. It's called the Santa Clarita Diet, I kid you not. After Fox canceled the wonderful series Lucifer, Netflix picked that up. And let's not forget another occult favorite called The Order, about a teenager who enters a secret society that practices, what else? Black magic, and more Satanism being promoted to young people. Lots of people, concludes the story, evidently don't want to pay for crap like this, and it's as simple as that. Your host adds, come on, folks, even if it was free, why would you want to let it into your house?
Did you write the book of love, and do you have faith in God above? If the Bible tells you so, how do you
Welcome back now to the second segment for this evening. I'm still your host, Mark Collin. We're still talking about the really major theme this week, which has to be great big whopping lies. So maybe it's important we start this segment off more or less chronologically, starting earlier in the week. And over the weekend, it looks like the deep state did manage to trigger a few more crazy leftists, proving they've managed to groom some homegrown terrorists after all. An Antifa-affiliated terrorist named Willem Van Spronson, age 69, was killed on Saturday morning during an attack on a migrant detention center in Tacoma, Washington. And his comrades are hailing him as a martyr for their anti-American leftist cause as a result of his failed rampage. The man who wrote an Antifa manifesto explaining his motives was shot dead after he threw Molotov cocktails at the ICE building and nearby cars on Saturday morning, torching at least one car, and attempting to blow up a commercial-sized propane tank attached to the center. But, says the Tacoma PD, law enforcement opened fire on the man and killed him before he could do any other damage. Constitutional rights organization Oath Keepers uncovered Van Spronson's rap sheet showing he was convicted of attacking a police officer last year. Deb Bartley, a friend of the fallen leftist for almost 20 years, quoted widely after the incident, told the Seattle Times that he was an Antifa activist and that his radical anarchist beliefs almost certainly inspired the attack. Quote, he was ready to end it, said Bartley. I think this was a suicide, but then he was able to kind of do it in a way that spoke to his political beliefs. I know he went down there knowing he was going to die, unquote. And in spite of early attempts by the Waystream and, of course, Washington politicians to paint this guy as the opposite of what he really was, some kind of libertarian constitutional right-wing extremist, they had to back off when Antifa kept celebrating him as a fallen comrade and a martyr. Here's one of the tamer quotes, and it's the only one I'll read. R.I.P., it said to anarchist fighter Willem Van Spronson, the attack on the ICE facility in Tacoma, Washington, is a proportionate action against enslavers and internment camp operators. He joins a long list of fallen anarchist martyrs who fought for a liberated world. Evidently, they mean like Mao, Che, and Evita. Asked later to condemn the Antifa violence, the Jihad Squad, you know the names, Ilhan Omar, the occasional Cortex et al., couldn't be bothered to say anything bad about the guy at all. Which really does speak volumes. From there, folks, we have to go to this one, and yes, it does seem to be a bit tongue-in-cheek. Comes nevertheless from RT, a.k.a. Russia Today, under the headline that the crowd of UFO fans seeking to raid Area 51 in the California desert hits a million people despite an official warning from the U.S. Air Force. If even a small fraction, it says, of those UFO lovers show up to try to break them aliens free from the secret desert facility, the Area 51 raid joke risks spilling over into one of the largest civil disobedience events ever in the United States. We can move faster than bullets, they quote the creators of the intentionally farcical event to claim, but what with over a million alien fans now registered as planning on going, and the same number in reserve, just interested in the raid, the U.S. Air Force, says RT, might find itself facing off against an unprecedented number of unarmed individuals. Said an official Air Force spokeswoman, we would discourage anyone from trying to come into the area, expressing hope that UFO enthusiasts understand that an attempted breach of a military installation is no laughing matter, and, were they to do so, authorities would have no choice but to use force.
which prompts your host to a somewhat disgusted observation. If the U.S. military actually ends up doing as good a job of defending Area 51 from actual Americans as they do against aliens, the other kind, trying to get into the country, pretty soon, who knows how many different kinds of aliens will be liberated and on buses, planes, and trains heading all over the United States. So, folks, ponder the irony of the embedded joke in this story. The United States military will not defend the borders of the country from an alien invasion, but claims they are willing to use deadly force to prevent Americans from finding out the truth about other aliens.
And you know what, folks? As I got to thinking about what I originally put in this section as a stress reliever piece, a little bit of humor, it occurred to me that there's more to it than that, or at least there ought to be. And maybe, in a kind of a twisted way, that was the point of the satirical Facebook event, actually entitled Storm Area 51, They Can't Stop All of Us, asking people to gather in the vicinity of that U.S. Air Force base in Lincoln County, Nevada. As a pilot, I've flown in the vicinity, but certainly never over, that huge area of restricted airspace in between California and Nevada that not only encompasses Groom Lake and Area 51, but the Edwards Air Force Base and a whole bunch of military facilities, literally thousands of square miles that's off-limits, Achtung Verboten, even to overflights by once-free Americans. You do a little bit of searching online, you'll find that the closest place the public can even climb and maybe get a distant look at Area 51 is called Teekaboo Peak, 26 miles to the east. And the beyond top-secret area within is surrounded by everything from military patrols and dogs to video cameras, proximity sensors, of course, fences. I guess you could call it kind of like a wall. And lots of pretty clear warnings about the use of everything from fines and prison sentences to deadly force should anyone attempt to enter or even get too close. And ponder this irony for just a second. That's a far cry from offering a life of free welfare and medical benefits if you can breach the perimeter, isn't it? And why aren't those with only an occasionally functioning cortex whining about anybody that might be put in a concentration camp for trying to get into Area 51? And yeah, how much did the wall around that facility cost the American taxpayers? And why, oh why, can't we do something similar on the southern border? Call it food for thought. And you know what, folks? After looking at this for a while, forget the coverage that CNN and the Waste Stream has given to this one bogus event alone. Imagine if even CNN International was to spend, 1% of the time attempting to dissuade real alien invaders from continuing to cross en masse the southern border of the United States that they currently spend trying to entice them to come in. The week's big stink started over the weekend as well, when the president tweeted about, at that point anyway, unnamed traitors, slamming various so-called progressive Democrats, but not by name, who continue to trash the United States. Some suggested could be communist immigrants infesting the House of Representatives that he's more or less transparently addressing here, like Representative Ilhan Omar, Somalian refugee, that so clearly hates the country that sadly took her in, Rashida Tlaib, eldest daughter of Palestinian immigrants in Detroit, and Prila Jayapal, immigrant from India, who also frequently trashes her adopted country, and seek to turn whatever it is that we once called the constitutional republics into whatever it is that they, at least once upon a time, were happy to have escaped from. Said the president in a series of tweets, quote, so interesting to see progressive Democrat congresswomen who originally came from countries whose governments are a complete and total catastrophe, the worst, most corrupt, and inept anywhere in the world, if they even have a functioning government, now loudly and viciously telling the people of the United States, the greatest and most powerful nation on earth, how our government is to be run. Why, he asked, don't they go back and help fix the totally broken and crime-infested places from which they came? Then come back and show us how it's done. Those places, he concluded, need your help badly. You can't leave fast enough. And this one's kind of enigmatic. He added that, I'm sure Nancy Pelosi would be very happy to quickly work out free travel arrangements, unquote, and yes, in spite of recent rancor, folks, the mind still boggles at least a bit. And to those who would point out that the occasional cortex comes from the now communist state of New York, which at least once upon a time was theoretically part of the constitutional set of republics, clearly that's no longer the case. And just to bring that point home, I honestly suspect that the vast majority of those currently living in New York City can't even remember what the Bill of Rights once was. Here, folks, we need to leap around a bit time-wise to flesh out the Jihad Squad story. After all, it's not like we really need a blow-by-blow of the intended number two version of the Bolshevik Revolution. Skipping to Thursday, David Steinberg at Powerline Blog published his latest report on the controversial, and I would say traitorous, Representative Ilhan Omar, writing that there's credible evidence that Ilhan Omar and her family changed their name to illegally enter the United States back in 1995. And since then, she continues to defy U.S. law on about every front you can imagine. According to Steinberg, Omar committed at least 8 instances of perjury dating back to 2009, which, if we actually still had a rule of law, are felonies that could amount to up to 40 years of prison time or deportation. There is, of course, far more actual evidence here than the traitorous fixer Robert Mueller needed to conduct a 2-year, multi-million-dollar witch hunt against the president. But let me just cut to the chase and suggest that there's more than enough probable cause to investigate Omar for these 8 instances of perjury, immigration fraud, marriage fraud. Yeah, you've probably heard she may have married her brother in order to violate immigration law. Years of state and federal tax fraud, all related, and 2 years of federal student loan fraud, among other allegedly criminal acts. And Steinberg actually left out what I would call the big one here. She lied massively when she took that infamous and clearly, at least to her, meaningless oath. Related midweek story, you could call this one tragic, ironic, and maybe even, well, there may be a scriptural lesson in here somewhere. A journalist who the WAPO says returned to the country of her birth, and still Ilhan Omar's beloved homeland too, Somalia, to challenge stereotypes and prove that the Islamic terror state was, quote, beautiful, ended up being killed by terrorists. On Friday last week, Hodan Nalaye was killed when al-Shabaab militants stormed the Asase Hotel in Kismayo, along with 25 others. And here's the point that's ignored completely by the waystream, courtesy of the Pluralist. While Nalaye's death would seem to underline the harshness of Trump's remarks, it was also a visceral argument for what many understood to be his central point, that perhaps immigrants should be especially grateful to live in the United States, unquote, rather than trying to destroy what it is that others built. Midweek, the House of Representatives, and how's that for a misnomer anymore, took up a resolution of impeachment against President Trump. They didn't really need grounds. All they wanted to do was to call him a racist again, which they did, of course, and nobody expected the piece of tripe to pass anyway. But it does help to paint the broader picture and set up where I want to go next. 2 days after the president provoked leftist Democrats to pass a resolution condemning him as racist, 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 by urging the nutcase squad of House freshman leftists, if you're not happy here, you can leave, the president is back, says Zero Hedge, with another tweet storm guaranteed to send the socialists on Capitol Hill into fits of apoplexy. In a string of tweets, it says, President Trump quotes Louisiana Senator John Kennedy, who blasted the members of the so-called squad, including the occasional Cortex, Ayanna Pressley, Ilhan Omar, and Rashida Tlaib, as left-wing cranks and the four horsewomen of the apocalypse. Kennedy blasted the congresswomen as irredeemably dumb, and he's kinder on that score than your host, folks, saying that they're the reason there are directions on a shampoo bottle, and lamented the fact that Democrat presidential candidates are literally falling all over themselves to try and agree with them. Kennedy starts by accusing the four women of believing that America is, quote, wicked in its origins, and that we are all racist, 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 and evil. Of course, they call evil good and vice versa, so that at least fits. After a lengthy quote of the Louisiana senator, Trump followed up with a tweet knocking Democrats for basically getting nothing done on anything important, especially stopping the invasion from the South, or improving infrastructure, or drug pricing, or any other issue, because, as he put it, they're too busy fishing for dirt on the president with their various so-called investigations. Which brings me to something I don't generally feel inclined to waste too much time on, and I'll call it the politics of politics. In other words, the actually nasty, kind of distasteful process of manipulating public opinion, for good or for ill. Now, as you know, I have no problem talking about the technology of doing it, and why we need to be aware of it, and resist it to the best of our abilities. That's the very essence of fighting propaganda and fake news. But I have from time to time mused about this president's pretty amazing ability to turn the tides on the really disgusting people who are trying to bury him and instead come out smiling and on top somehow. I do, however, continue to wish he'd continue to do what he said he was going to do, and that's lock him up. But I will say that the politics of this latest move to try to derail the Bolshevik Revolution are interesting and hopefully going to be successful. I'm looking at two pieces. First one comes from Pat Buchanan via his website and a bunch of others. Zarahedge posted with the headline that Trump is fueling a tribal war in Nancy's house. He begins by saying President Donald Trump's playground taunt on Sunday that the squad of the four radical liberal House Democrats, all women of color, who should, quote, go back and help fix the totally broken and crime-infested places from which they came, dominated Monday morning's waste stream headlines. The Democrats, said Buchanan, are today using language to describe their own leaders. It's similar to the language of the 1960s radicals who denounced Democrat segregationist governors like Ross Barnett and George Wallace. The occasional cortex, he continues, has accused House Speaker Nancy Pelosi of attacking newly elected women of color, prompting many to ask, was she calling nutcase Nancy a racist? Two? No, protested AOC, but, says Buchanan, it sure sounded like it. He quotes AOC's chief of staff, whom some call the occasional cortex's brain, which doesn't sound like a compliment to me anyway. And honestly, I don't feel like repeating any of this. But Buchanan does, and after a number of them, he notes that all of this kind of sounds like these far leftists and their puppet masters calling members of the Black Caucus Uncle Toms. Meanwhile, he continues, the president doubles down, continuing to pour salt in their own self-inflicted wounds, to the point where Buchanan suggests that the four horsewomen have achieved a prominence that perhaps exceeds that of Majority Leader Steny Hoyer or Majority Whip James Clyburn. Who? Even though the four have no clout in the Democrat caucus, but because of the confrontations they've caused and the controversy they've created, they have a massive media following. Or perhaps, folks, your cynical host suggests it's the other way around. But here's Buchanan's point. Paradoxically, their interest in winning cheers as the fighting arm of the socialist, far-left, progressive communist Democrats coincides with the interest of Donald Trump, who entertains and energizes his base by answering in kind their attacks on him and by adopting incendiary rhetoric of his own. He's now assuming the old America, love it or leave it stance and going after those four traitors for being precisely what they are, anti-American, Constitution-hating ingrates. And I had to add a few appropriate adjectives in there. By calling Trump a criminal, a racist, and a fascist, and they don't even know what that word means, obviously, for whom impeachment proceedings should have begun months ago, they elate and energize the outraged, far-gone nutcase left of their own party. And among the presidential candidates, some have now begun to side with the Fabulous Four, with Bernie Sanders saying Pelosi has been a little too tough on them. Adding on Meet the Depressed, quote, you cannot ignore the young people of this country who are passionate about economic and racial and social and environmental justice. You've got to bring them in, not alienate them, unquote. Trump evidently goaded Pelosi into re-elevating the race issue and saying this, quote, when Trump tells four American congresswomen, sick, to go back to their countries, he reaffirms his plan to make America great again has always been about making America white again, unquote. Do Democrats, asked Buchanan, really believe that relighting and refighting the racial battles of the 1960s that were thought to have been resolved is a winning hand in 2020? Does Pelosi really think, he continues, that demeaning white America is going to rally either white or minority Americans to Democratic banners? And here I'll summarize a couple of paragraphs. It's not, folks, like the racist, racist, racist chant hasn't been pretty well revealed for what it truly is. Like the failed Russia hoax coup, another great big fat whopping lie. Along with criminally negligent news that's fake to the core, and anti-fascism that literally out-Adolfs the original fascists. Because at least they admitted what they were willing to kill for. concludes Buchanan, Trump is driving a wedge right through the Democrat Party between its moderates and militant leftist wings. With his attacks over the last 48 hours, Trump has signaled whom he prefers to be his opponents in 2020. And it's not Joe, I can't remember my last name anymore, Biden. It is the Squad. On Sunday, he says, Pelosi recited again her mantra, diversity is our strength, unity is our power. And it sounded less, he says, like a proclamation than a plea. Yeah, we see the diversity. Where's the unity? Joseph Curl, who ran the Drudge Report a few years back, goes even a bit further by coming right out and invoking the 3D chess thing again when he says Trump has made a move that makes Democrats embrace the most extreme members of their party. He begins by saying that when he saw the president's tweets over the weekend, he called them odd tweets, the ones that told about those four American traitresses. My first thought, he writes, was about Napoleon Bonaparte, who famously said, never interfere with an enemy while he's in the process of destroying himself, which, notes Curl, is precisely what Democrats have been doing now for weeks. And he cites examples from the first debate when they all agreed, yeah, we want to give away all kinds of free stuff and encourage more illegal aliens to come on in and overthrow the country, especially including free health care. A couple of the traitors, Cory Booker and Bozo Beto, the Irish version of Pocahontas for Hispanics, even traveled to the border personally to try and entice foreigners into the United States. And all of that led up to the occasional Cortex and her comrades calling Nutcase Nancy a racist. So he says Trump leaping in with incendiary tweets certainly overshadowed the infighting in the Democrat Party, right, and drew the focus away from their terrible policies, didn't it? Isn't that crazy? Yep, he says, crazy like a fox. And he quotes a few more of the president's tweets to outline the division he's fomenting. But he says there was method to Trump's madness, which he clearly defined in a later tweet, just as House Democrats banded together to call for a vote to condemn his remarks. And, says Curl, he nailed it when he wrote the following. The Dems were trying to distance themselves from the four progressives, but now they're forced to embrace them, he said. That means they're endorsing socialism, hatred of Israel, and the USA. Not good for the Democrats, unquote. Which, says Curl, was the whole point. Trump wanted to call the four progressives out, make them the subject, and force Democrats to defend them. And by doing so, the entire party is now embracing the ideology that they spew. But, like so many leftist socialists before them, often try to deny when somebody actually points out what it is they're espousing, whether it's Marxist-Leninism or gun confiscation. And by getting them to come right out and admit the ideology they spew, they're also coming out and describing their deep disdain, if not outright hatred, for America and all of the principles that once built this nation. That, he says, is kind of brilliant, said a White House official to the Daily Mail after the so-called Squad held a rambling press conference. Trump, quote, couldn't have scripted this any better. They were warned against taking the bait, and then they took it. Now they're the party of the occasional Cortex, and that won't end well. Unquote. Even closet leftist Lindsey Graham predicted the move, warning on Fox News that Trump could single-handedly make those four women, quote, the face of the future of the Democratic Party. And if he can do that, said Graham, he could destroy the socialist, leftist, progressive, Democrat Party. And now that's done, because the House moved quickly on a resolution condemning Trump's so-called racist comments, and Pelosi called the four lawmakers on their very fringe our sisters. Quote, the fact is, as offended as we are, and we are offended by what he said about our sisters, he says that about people every day, and they feel as hurt as we do about somebody in our family having this offense against them, unquote, said the speaker for the traitors. And let me interject this here, folks. It's about time that somebody, and that would include the president, actually comes out and tells traitors that, in fact, by failing to honor their oaths of office, while they, in fact, make war on the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and, yes, the American people, the real ones that they're seeking to overturn and destroy, they are traitors. So, concludes Joseph Curl, the president set out to make the Democrats embrace the four traitors, and they've done so. Yes, he concludes, he might be mocked when he calls himself, modestly, a stable genius, but he clearly outplayed the leftists on this one, and they still don't even know it. All right, well, on that score, I guess so far so good. It really is appropriate and important that the president point out the genuine threat that's facing what's left of the American republics at this point in the form of a new high-tech Bolshevik revolution. The problem your host has with it, folks, is that it might be too little too late. It's very good to wake people up to just how far gone things really are. But let's not kid ourselves here. It's not about the next election at all. If we don't turn back the censorship, an election won't matter. And if people don't wake up soon to the rest of what's coming, the nation won't even make it, as a nation at least, to the 2020 election anyway. Waking up, in other words, is only the first step towards what really needs to be done. But as an engineer, folks, one thing I know for sure, you can never solve a problem without at least admitting what it actually is.